It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brad Love. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Awesome. Just older than I'm white.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur hour?
This is gonna be huge.
I believe this is gonna be our finest hour.
Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Do you?
Nothing brightens up a cloudy day better than Huey Lewis and the news. Bringing us into the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Adam Lundy, and we're glad to have you on board. Be sure to text us any thoughts, questions, comments, or suggestions at 46862 on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Big show on the way. We'll talk all things Pacers and Fever. It's where the two worlds collide in the coming week because the Pacers heading into the playoffs or play-in, depending on exactly how this final week goes in the regular season, and then the Fever getting all set for the draft, and I believe that Caitlin Clark may be the name we hear when the Pacers are on the or the Fever are on the clock to start off the WNBA draft.
You got an inkling?
Well, I will say this. If she is not the first pick, there's 90% of those Fever games that are supposed to be on national television that are in jeopardy. Because I do believe that 90% of the Fever games heading to national television are only heading to national television because of what Caitlin Clark just did with the numbers in college basketball. So, yes, I do believe we're pretty safe at this point that Caitlin Clark is going to be the number one overall pick. But we'll talk to Pat Boylan and get his take on what's happening with these two worlds colliding this week. He'll join us coming up in about 30 minutes. Also in hour number two, James Boyd from The Athletic. Haven't talked to James for a while. It is that time. It's April. That means it's draft month, and it's time to find out what direction things seem to be looking. In the latest reports, the Colts might be interested in moving up. What? I'm in total shock. That the Colts would even consider doing such a thing under Chris Ballard. But, yeah, there's a couple of reports out there, and the guy they might go up for is not the name you think.
Huh.
We'll talk about that coming
okay,
up in the
yeah.
show a little bit more. Also, at this point, still have Tin Caps Baseball tonight. So far, Mother Nature has to cooperate a little more than she has so far throughout the day. There are, and here's the tough thing, there are some windows on the radar where, yeah, you might be able to get in some baseball, but it might be a little wet leading up to it, and it might be a little wet after it, but there's some windows. It's just one of those questions. How much will we get, and when will we get it? But I know they really want to get tonight in after the rain out last night.
Right.
Because now you schedule the rain out from last night for Saturday. That means tonight the only day you'd have is tomorrow to be able to make up a game.
Right. No doubleheaders on Sunday.
And I don't think you can do two doubleheaders within 24 hours.
No.
So I don't know if that's a specific rule or if it is just something that the teams would follow. But, you know, all I'm looking at is right now you've got a Saturday afternoon doubleheader. You get rained out tonight. You've got a Friday game that's currently scheduled at 7 o'clock. And then Sunday's getaway day where there won't be a doubleheader. So especially when you get to play that team a couple of more times here in the first half. I think they have at least one other series scheduled. In fact, it's just a couple of weeks away, I think, over in Lake County. But we'll keep you abreast of what we hear on Tin Caps Baseball tonight. Last night, of course, with the rain out, I was on the radio side. So it was the Mike Maz and Brett Rump show for a little bit last night because it's kind of nice. You don't have to really focus on the game. You have a conversation. And for me, it's nice because I don't expect people to tune into the Sports Rush to hear me go on and on about all the science of pitching.
Right.
But it was kind of fun because, you know, one thing I really don't like during the course of a game is to hear a play-by-play guy that's interviewing the color guy, you know, mm-hmm. where he's, mm-hmm. you know, what do you think about this? What are you seeing with this? What I like is for it to be very organic. The color guy throws in what he sees, but it's not something where it sounds like the play-by-play guy is interviewing his color guy. But in a case like last night where we don't have any action, Mike can ask me all the questions he wants about pitching. He did last night. And then also it's a subject I'm pretty passionate about when it comes to everything that goes into a pitcher, not only the mechanics of pitching, the mental side of pitching, pitch sequences, everything that you can think of. We had a chance to talk about it a little bit on the broadcast last night because we were just waiting to get word whether or not the game was officially scrapped.
Yep.
As we sat in the booth and watched it rain. Eventually, last night just was not going to be an opportunity to play baseball. And so the game got rained out. And as we mentioned, it's going to be Saturday, 1 o'clock, doubleheader down in Parkview Field. For everybody that's got a ticket to Saturday's game, if you had a ticket to last night's game, it's good to exchange for a ticket of equal or lesser value all season long. And so go ahead and do that. Get your ticket, and you can still come out and enjoy Tin Caps baseball probably in the month of April. All right, so last night, Comets, we talked about it being a must-win. And I don't, you know, maybe we overused the phrase, but the Comets are not in a very good position. They could have been in a really good position, and now they're not in a real good position because they lost the game they needed to win badly last night against Wheeling. It's one of those head-to-head games that's a four-pointer, and you know you're not going to get any help because you're playing the team you're chasing, and unfortunately for the Comets, they lost to Wheeling last night 4-1. Just as Shane told us, the Comets fell behind. They were down 3-0, and it was never much of a game. Ryan Fanti wasn't quite good enough. The offense didn't do enough to put pressure on the Nailers, and ultimately the Comets lose this one. And that hurts because now the Comets are sitting in a position outside the playoff field, and they're going to have to not only go almost undefeated, but they're also going to have to require some help. And that is never a position you want to be in going into the last week, is knowing other games have to go your way because you have no control over those. And so the Comets didn't do what they needed to do when they controlled their own destiny. And now they've got to have a little bit of help and no, zero margin for error.
Sticky situation here. We'll see how things play out this weekend. But like you said, they really just could have used that win last night.
Yeah, they've got the Indy Fuel.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The rest of their games are not
against the top two teams in the division.
Yeah.
Indy Fuel, Toledo Walleye, Toledo Walleye. And they haven't exactly performed great against those two teams, especially against Toledo. So not a good situation to be in after losing the game last night. I know we're sitting here in the studio, and look at there. Tiger Woods playing in a Masters.
How about that?
It's pretty cool to see, and hopefully physically he'll be able to do it. You know, the one thing, Adam, is when you're not used to being out walking the courses and doing it, the Masters is the worst place to try to come back, because the one thing we can't see, television levels out the field. In other words, it doesn't look quite as hilly as it really is. I mean, that is downhill walking, uphill walking the entire way. And both are equally tiresome. And that's the grind that Tiger Woods is going to put himself through on a long course that is full of inclines. It's not going to be an easy couple of days for Tiger Woods, especially playing in an afternoon tee time today, which has been pushed back because of the rain delay this morning. And then having to get right back at it tomorrow morning.
Yeah, to finish.
And we don't expect tomorrow morning to be delayed. So actually the window between his round ending tonight and his round starting tomorrow has shrunk because of the rain overnight last night. I really want to pull for Tiger to at least put on a good showing. He's one of the game's all-time greats. And, it's you hate to see a guy that's just trying to hang on. You know, but you want to see him at least be competitive. And I'd like to see him make the cut because I think it makes for better TV over the weekend. I'd like to see him compete because the last time he did in 2019 when he won the Masters, his fifth Masters, was pushing him one behind Jack Nicklaus. That was great TV over the weekend. The Tiger comeback, everybody else started to collapse around him. The door was opened up and Tiger bust through. You give him a chance, he takes advantage of it. And so that was just outstanding television. Mm-hmm. Emotional with his kids and the hug after he finished the round, the scream with the arms in the air. That was awesome. And, you know, those are the kind of memories you want to have of Tiger Woods at the Masters. You don't want to have him limping his way into the clubhouse after having to withdraw, or limping his way toward the clubhouse on number 18 at the end of a 9-over first couple of rounds. And so we'll see how Tiger Woods does. I'm trying to see if I can see the scores, but from this side of the room, I can't. But I can tell you that Bryson DeChambeau is just tearing things up today.
He sure is. 7-under. Looking real good.
New slimmer trimmer, Bryson DeChambeau. Remember when he bulked up a couple of years ago? He kind of got rid of some of that bulk. But
let's see. Woods is 1-under through one. So looks like he birdied his first hole.
You know, DeChambeau, I think, came out, birdied the first three holes. In fact, what I'm understanding, and I didn't have a chance to watch the Masters today, but what I'm understanding is that there's a couple birdie opportunities in those first three holes, and some players have taken advantage of getting off to really good starts. Victor Hovland, he's got a good round going, 4-under through the first nine.
Mm-hmm.
We'll keep you up to date with what's happening at the Masters. Danny Willett. There's a name we haven't heard or talked about for a long time. She is the leader in the clubhouse, so to speak, at 4-under par, shot a 68 today. Really, for the Masters, you can't win the tournament on the opening weekend, but you can certainly lose it. And so for most of these golfers, they just want to be on the better side of par.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you shoot anything that's under par, you're in perfectly good shape. Now, the course should be pretty receptive, even though they've got a great drainage system, so you don't have standing water. But you've got to think, with all of the rain that they had overnight at Augusta, that the course is pretty receptive. The thing they're playing against is the wind.
Mm.
Very windy this afternoon.
Yeah.
And I think the wind is supposed to calm a little bit, but again, wind... tough course, and I believe, you know, the Masters tried to be fair with that and tried to give some favorable pin placements, which guys are taking advantage of, because there's a lot of guys who've had pretty good rounds today, a lot of under par at the Masters. I know Mickelson is playing. I know he was over par last time I heard on an update. They mentioned Mickelson, so I don't know where Mickelson is at, but we'll try to keep you up to date. Who do you have to win the Masters? Let us know on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line 46862. Popular choices, Scottie Scheffler. But wouldn't it be something if Scottie Scheffler goes into the weekend with the lead and his wife goes into labor? What does he do?
Oh, man. I don't know.
His wife is expecting any day now. But Scottie Scheffler would be one of the more popular names.
Scheffler currently...
John Rahm.
Yeah, Scheffler currently 2-under through 10. Mickelson's 1-under through 14. Rahm is also 1-under through 11.
See, and so that's fine position. You're going to see some guys go low, you know, 3, 4, 5-under. But if you're under par, you're in perfectly good position. Remember, this tournament is generally won with a score somewhere between 10 to 15 under par.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 to 12, maybe even more likely. So, you know, if you can just hang on. And then Sunday, of course, there's a few holes where the ball will roll toward the hole if you put it in the right spot of the green. So it'll be fun to watch this weekend. The Masters going for the green jacket. John Rahm going for back-to-back. And, you know, I almost wanted to put a little something-something on John Rahm, because it does seem like the year for back-to-back.
Mm.
Especially with UConn just coming off a back-to-back NCAA championship.
Okay, a little inspo there from UConn.
And, of course, the other thing is, for those that miss the old PGA Tour before you had LIV come along, this is your chance to see both LIV golfers and PGA golfers together, you know, dining in the same dining halls, etc. But, you know, there's still apparently, you know, we heard the news that there was going to be a merger and these two were going to come together. We haven't gotten anything official at this point. We still kind of wait on how that is all going to look, but at least this weekend, both LIV golfers and PGA golfers playing in Augusta at the Masters. Jim no Nance Masters. Is going to be on the call for the Masters, right? I think he gave up the college basketball, but he's still going to be the lead anchor. You know who's got his final Masters? Yep. Is probably one of the most legendary voices of the Masters because he's called some of the most historic shots at the Masters.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't remember Tiger Woods' chip in on 16? Where he chipped it up over the hole and it rolled all the way back. And just as it was about to stop, it took that final rotation of the ball and dropped into the cup. Who was the one there on the call? It was Vern Lundquist, who I miss calling football. But I understand at some point you got to call it a career. But Vern was outstanding and always has been. Everybody that has worked with him or knows him has never said an unkind thing about Vern Lundquist, but, you know, he was there for Nicklaus when Nicklaus won his sixth, and he was there for Tiger Woods when he had that remarkable chip in. Vern Lundquist calling his final Masters this weekend for CBS. Well, big news today, O.J. Simpson passes away. He could not beat cancer. There was no judge. There was no jury. Cancer becomes the winner in this one. O.J. Simpson dead at the age of 76. And I guess when we say O.J. Simpson, first thing that comes to mind, is that his legacy? Because I think everybody's first thought is going to be O.J. Simpson, the Bronco, the trial. It consumed us for almost a year watching everything going on around the double murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and... who was the Ron Goldberg? Goldberg was it? But anyway, you've got the you know O.J. Simpson, of course. Then jumping in the Bronco, taking off with A.J. Collins. I'll be honest. At that point, I didn't know what to think about this entire event. I thought the whole thing. I thought it can't be O.J. I mean, at that point, it was a beloved former athlete, an announcer on games. Did a lot of sponsorships, and I thought, can't be O.J. And then the evidence started coming in, and when he ended up in that Bronco on the chase down the L.A. freeway, I thought, this doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't help the image.
Only one reason that you run from the law when the law is ready to take you in.
Yeah.
And then it ended up, of course, he got off on the charges. And just a lot of people, I think, when you think of O.J. Simpson, is that what you remember? Or do you remember O.J. Simpson, the Hall of Fame football player who put up records in the NFL? Your thoughts on the legacy of O.J. Simpson. Also, for those that really go back, his years at USC and how he was a dominant running back for the USC Trojans. But that was big news today, O.J. Simpson. Passes away at 76, dying of cancer. All right, let's go ahead and find out what's happening. World of sports, let's check in. Today's top headlines, it is Adam Lundy.
All right, thanks, Brett. Well, Notre Dame guard Marcus Burton has announced that he will enter the NBA draft while maintaining eligibility at Notre Dame.
Oh, Burton. So he's entering the draft, but he's not entering the portal. A lot of these guys come out and enter both at the same time, but he will. If he doesn't go to the draft, he's coming back to Notre Dame.
You got it. Burton averaged.
My eyes got big for a moment.
You got scared. Burton averaged 17.5 points per game in his freshman season at Notre Dame, ultimately leading to him winning ACC Rookie of the Year honors. Former Colts starting cornerback and second-round pick, Rock Ya-Sin has signed a veteran deal with the San Francisco 49ers, so good luck to him there in his 49ers journey. The former interpreter for Shohei Ohtani stole more than $16 million over 2 years from the Los Angeles Dodgers superstar to pay off gambling debts to an illegal sports book. This according to an affidavit filed by federal authorities today. Authorities filed a complaint accusing Ipe Mizuhara of bank fraud, which can carry a maximum fine up to $1 million or up to 30 years in prison, according to federal sentencing guidelines. On or about March 20th, Mizuhara messages the bookmaker saying, quote, "Have you seen the reports?" The bookmaker responded, "Yes, but that's all BS. Obviously, you didn't steal from Ohtani. I understand it's a cover job. I totally get it." Mizuhara then responded to bookmaker, "Technically, I did steal from him. It's all over for me."
Well, You know what? He rigged the bank account because we talked about this. Remember when I said, how do you not get alerted by your bank when there's that kind of money being moved around? And he actually set up the bank account and removed all the alerts, all notifications. He completely blindsided Ohtani on this.
Yeah, just really messy and not looking good for the interpreter. Here's a fun story to round out the day for you, Brett. Parkview Field, home of the Fort Wayne Tin Caps, will host the first annual Indiana Mac and Cheese Festival this summer. The event was chosen at Parkview Field as proving to be the perfect location for the event this summer. The festival will showcase over 50 one-of-a-kind mac and cheese dishes.
Oh, no.
Crafted by local and statewide vendors. Are you going to go?
I'm done.
Are you going to go to Mac and Cheese Fest?
I'm done for, man. There goes the whole diet. Anything I lose between now and then is coming back on. Mac and cheese, one of my weaknesses.
And there's going to be over 50 kinds, my friend.
Oh, man, remember we were out at Winter Circle and they had the brisket mac and cheese, which I still have to get try. Last night at Parkview Field in the press box, they were serving mac and cheese. And Parkview Field puts on a great mac and cheese. So it's a great place to put on this event.
Let's go and let's put on a couple pounds.
I do think they need... Couple, yeah. Oh, man. All right, there we go with today's top headlines. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Our text line open, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Pat Boylan from the Indiana Pacers and Indiana Fever is going to join us coming up in just a few minutes. News today that Chris Holtmann at DePaul, former Ohio State coach, now the coach of the DePaul Blue Demons, has added another former Butler coach on his staff, as Chris Holtmann has hired Laval Jordan as DePaul's general manager and assistant coach. Now, first of all, Laval Jordan was the color commentator when the Mastodons played DePaul to open up the season last year. So had a chance to talk to Laval a little bit, But here's the interesting part of this is that Chris Holtmann, one of the knocks on Chris Holtmann at Ohio State was he didn't really get a good grasp on managing the overall program, that he knew the X's and O's, that he was an outstanding coach and developer of talent. But when it came to the administrative part of being a head coach of a major program, he really struggled. That the NIL, understanding what funds you have available, the do's and don'ts of compliance and everything, that the administrative side of the job, Chris Holtmann, that was considered to be his weakness at Ohio State. And so it's very interesting that he goes and gets a guy who's got power program coaching experience and is hired as the, quote, general manager, which it's almost like, okay, we can admit it now that college basketball's become a professional sport. We are now hiring general managers to run programs. But that's the latest hire. Jordan, of course, spent the last two seasons with Fox Sports as a television and studio or on-site and studio analyst. Purdue, Mason Gillis, Ethan Morton, both out. Now, before you start thinking this is a Mason Gillis and an Ethan Morton decision, hold on. This is one of those situations where it is very likely that for some time there's been an understanding that these two guys were going to complete their 4 years, they were going to get their degree at Purdue, and they were moving on. Because Matt Painter went out and recruited more players than he has scholarships available. In fact, even with Mason Gillis and Ethan Morton both entering the transfer portal, you've still got one extra scholarship out there that's not available. Purdue has six incoming freshmen. They don't have any flexibility when it comes to the transfer portal. They are kind of locked in with their roster. And so I believe it's kind of a mutual thing that's been an understanding that Ethan Morton, Mason Gillis were probably going to be moving on at the end of their senior year and not coming back to Purdue. And if they decided they did want to play another year of college basketball, they would transfer and find some place to go to play the final year. It might even be with the assistance of Matt Painter. I mean, because it's just a roster logjam right now. It's just tough roster management when you go out and make more offers and get more kids committed and sign a bigger class than what you've got spots available.
Yeah, and these roles are just now kind of becoming defined more and more as they, you know, you kind of head into the next season, and you know where you're going to be kind of in standing. And I'm sure Painter communicates to these guys and saying and lets them know like what it's going to be looking like next season.
Yeah, and well, there's probably conversations that go on for a year or two.
Yeah, absolutely.
About you know, hey, have you thought about what your future plans are? Here's what we're looking at. You know, and probably during the season, there's not a lot of discussion because everything's focused on basketball and what takes place on the court. But I don't think this was probably a shock to Purdue.
No.
And I think this was one of those kind of mutual understandings type of situation. Now, maybe I'll find out something different. But at this point, I look at it and say, this is a separation that was by destiny, not because of somebody that was upset. And so you've got Mason Gillis and Ethan Morton both transferring out. And it's a shame because I like both players. I think they both have significant talents that they bring to a club. But if you're going to bring in six freshmen, which I think might be the mistake, because it is going to be a very young roster with six freshmen out of the 13 scholarship spots, and it might end up being five freshmen because you might have one freshman that has to stall a year. Maybe a year of prep school. Dylan Sin and I were talking last night, and Dylan Sin brought up that idea that you might have one of the freshmen that ends up at a prep school for a year, but then comes in as part of the next class.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, because you do have the spot that'll be available when Caleb first then runs out of eligibility, and that will be 1 year away. He's on his final year coming up next season. But I don't think this was anything insulting to Purdue. I think it was kind of understood. And now the big question is, what is going to be the right fit for Mason Gillis? I think he's going to have an opportunity to start somewhere. I think he's good enough to find a roster where he can step in and compete for the four-man position. Ethan Morton, I'm not sure, unless he kind of steps back in program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his best skill is defense, and there's not a lot of coaches that are going to bring in a guy and put him in the starting lineup just because he's a good defender.
No.
And that's his best trait.
I still see him as more of a six man, honestly, even if he's at a lower major program.
I see him as a six man or a guy that comes off the bench to be a stopper of a guy who's on a heat check, you know, and stuff like that. But not necessarily, I mean, probably the same role he played at Purdue.
Right, exactly.
4-6-8-6-2. And of course, we're asking the question, is macaroni and cheese the perfect man food? you know, I mean, who doesn't love some good mac and cheese?
Oh, man.
Cheddar?
Whatever.
Got to go some heavy cheddar on the mac and cheese, homemade. You know, I got a weakness for it.
I can tell.
Cinnamon rolls, and you're very well aware of my weakness when it comes to cinnamon rolls.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
And my real favorite cinnamon roll is the Holiday Inn Express cinnamon roll, which, I mean, I just get giddy when I find out that the team is going to be staying at a Holiday Inn Express. You know, it's been like 3 years since we stayed at one, too.
Oh, so, man.
I'm suffering a bit. I'm just wondering, is it against protocol for me to wake up some morning and just walk into the lobby at Holiday Inn Express, grab one of their cinnamon rolls?
If you act like you're staying there.
How do you get one if you're not actually staying at a Holiday Inn Express? I might go stay at a Holiday Inn Express just to get their cinnamon roll in the morning. That's just how much I love them. But mac and cheese, oh, that does it for me, too.
Love it.
Yeah, both of them, not real healthy for you.
Mm. I mean, all the best foods aren't healthy for you.
The nutritionist is not going to recommend a diet of cinnamon rolls and mac and cheese. But isn't that what great food, you know, good taste in food, isn't that what it is? It never is the good taste in food that's the healthiest for
you. No, it's the cheesy, carby.
You've got to tolerate the stuff they tell you to eat.
Sugary. Goodness.
Give me some big old pile of mac and cheese. And the great thing about mac and cheese, it can be a side.
Yeah.
Or it could be your main dish. I mean, it's a pasta, right?
It's a pasta.
It's a pasta. I'm going to have a dinner of mac and cheese.
You can scale it up.
I could drop a few hot dogs or sausage in it.
Scaling it up, yeah.
And call it dinner.
There we go.
4-6-8-6-2, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Coming up next, we talk to Pat Boylan. Pacers, Fever. We've got it both covered next here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Covering Colts football and what to expect with the NFL draft with James Boyd coming up in our next hour. Right now, we want to talk about the Indiana Pacers and, of course, the Indiana Fever. And to do that, we've got the guy who wears both hats, and it is Pat Boylan, who you hear on Pacers broadcast, also part of the Indiana Fever broadcast. And, Pat, I don't know how this news of 90% of the Fever's games being on national television affects your role, but going to be some national exposure for the Fever this year.
Yeah, that's putting it mildly. You know, we'll have our broadcast plan out, I think, in the not-too-distant future. The good news for the Fever is, as you said, nearly every game is going to be available on some sort of national medium. And most of the, a lot of these, I should say, are not network exclusive. So a lot of these, a lot of those games that you're seeing will be ones that will ultimately be taking our feed or will get to broadcast. So the number that we'll get to do will go down. That has been expected, I think, by us ever since Indiana got the number one pick. But we'll still get to do a fair portion of the games this year. And for those who are interested in watching the Fever here locally or nationally, you're going to have plenty of opportunities to do so.
Pat, is there any player, men or women, that has brought this kind of hype and this kind of juice into the league as Caitlin Clark has?
You know, I don't really think there has been. Now, that's not to suggest there haven't been generational type of players that have been landscape changing. LeBron James certainly was, and Michael Jordan and all those types of players, and maybe Victor Wembanyama will be that too. Steph Curry, of course. But what's so different here is the NBA's popularity is at already a high level. The NBA would have and will be just fine without LeBron James. And that's not to suggest the WNBA won't or wouldn't, or that women's college basketball won't or wouldn't be fine. It's a lot more than just one player, of course. And I think part of the reason the TV ratings were as high as they were wasn't just Caitlin Clark, but just how many big-name stars that there are in the women's college game in general. That said, you know, for a league like the WNBA that's still growing, what somebody like Clark can do and what Clark can do for women's basketball is she's capable of raising the bar so many levels higher just because of where the bar is initially versus the NBA. You know, I've heard a comparison, and I was a little young when he came onto the scene, but I think it's probably a pretty good one, which is what Tiger Woods did for golf. And I think those comparisons make a lot of sense here.
How do you balance the fatigue versus the process of learning as a rookie? Because Caitlin Clark and in fact, all of the women who come in to the WNBA, very few of them, unless they're a rookie, have just gone through the type of season that she has gone through with the minutes played and everything. And it's only about a, what, six-week break or so, and the season will start with the WNBA. How do you balance that the factor where you don't want to burn them out in their rookie year, you don't want to make them a risk for injury, but yet you also need to showcase them and get them up and running? How do you balance that?
Yeah, I would say from a casual fan's perspective, it is the biggest storyline that I don't think a lot of people know about, which is, or maybe have totally thought about, which is, you know, in the NBA, you get drafted over the summer and you've got summer league to adapt, and then you've got a couple of months between that draft and when the season starts, and you've got a couple of months from when your college season ends to when the draft happens. And in the WNBA, it's a very, very quick turnaround. This is also an Olympic year, which means the league shuts down for about a month in the middle of it for the Olympics, which means the year starts earlier and ends later to make up for that. So the WNBA season this year is starting a little over a week earlier than it typically does, so that gap is even smaller. And it's a real, real challenge, not just for a Caitlin Clark, but as you mentioned, for any of these players that go through it. You think about when college basketball practices start, and then the season, if you go deep into the tournament, like many of these players that will be drafted did, you're talking about, oh, I don't know, 7 or 8 months already that you've been go, go, go. And then you get drafted, and then it's an immediate turnaround. I mean, we're talking about a May 14th start date here, just a little over a month from now, and preseason games begin before that. I think they maybe begin as early as May 8th. So it is such a quick turnaround, and there's so many different angles that are challenging about it, the obvious physical side. But, you know, you're uprooting your life. You're moving to a new area, a new city that you've never lived in for most of these players. You're joining a new coaching staff that you probably don't know well, if at all. you're joining new teammates. I mean, it's just such a rapid turnaround. It's such a significant challenge that every player has to deal with. And, you know, there's no great answer to it other than just you have to be ready to go from the get-go. And fortunately, younger players are a bit more physically equipped to handle something like this. But it's one of the real challenges of a WNBA player's rookie season. And I would say those dynamics are even more dramatic this year because of the way the schedule plays out. And it, you know, without being a player, I don't know exactly what it's like, but it is certainly an obstacle for anybody who gets drafted this year.
Okay, this is kind of a crazy question, but with some of the talk around the WNBA and the fact that there seems to be a little bit of jealousy of the attention that Caitlin Clark is getting, and some of the players are supposedly saying her game's not going to translate, she's not going to give the same kind of numbers at the WNBA as she did in college. I think about is, could she be susceptible to a cheap shot? Could someone? There seems to be a little bit of a jealousy around the league. And I'm, in my mind, Pat, I'm thinking these women should be welcoming her because she's bringing new eyeballs to a league that is their profession. How do you feel the league accepts her once she gets out there on the court?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's a question that the WNBA really hasn't dealt with much, or if at all. There are so many angles and dynamics of this at play that are really uncharted territory, and so to be truthful, I don't know. But what I do think, I think the vast majority of players will view things how you do, which is that it's a very good thing for our sport. A rising tide lifts all boats. I can't tell you how many times I've used that phrase in the last week. And if you think about it, more eyeballs on the sport means higher television dollars that come in. And more television money that comes in and more people in the stands mean a higher salary cap, which means the players' salaries go up. So something like this stands to benefit every single player in the league, I think. But I don't know, and I do think the question that you bring up is a valid one. Is there some jealousy? Is there, some disdain for somebody who's done nothing wrong? She hasn't asked for any of this, but has come with all of this. And, you know, maybe to a slight degree, a Diana Taurasi or a player that comes from an earlier age, a Sue Bird, who were stars in their own right but never had this type of popularity, some of it is, you know, the age and the era we're living in. Diana Taurasi's clips were not on Twitter when she was going through UConn, and she's as good of a player that has probably ever picked up a basketball on the women's side. And so to a degree, I can understand that, but I think at the end of the day, these players are going to realize that Caitlin Clark stands to make them a fair amount of money too. And when the new CBA comes up, she could have a significant impact on the livelihood of everybody.
Pat Boylan joining us, part of the Indiana Pacers and Indiana Fever broadcast. And if we look and turn the page over to the Indiana Pacers, it's been a pretty good week. Pacers with a couple of impressive home wins, and then they go on the road and beat the Raptors. Nothing final yet. Still a big week remaining. But the Pacers have got themselves in the position they want to be in, which is in that top six.
It's amazing to think that after the end of the day tomorrow, the Pacers could be in fourth, or they could be tied for seventh. Now, if they're tied for seventh, they'll win the tiebreak, and they'll still be in sixth with Philadelphia. Miami losing last night was significant because it eliminated a potential three-way tiebreaker that was out there that left a scenario where the Pacers could finish 1-1 in these final two games, but still finish in the play-in tournament. Miami's loss eliminated those chances. So the Pacers know they win one of their next two games, and they're not going to need the play-in tournament. And they also know if they go 2-0, they're very, very likely going to have home court advantage in the first round, which is a phrase that I'm still kind of wrapping my head around, because I think for the longest time, you looked at the playoff picture and you said, okay, these other teams are starting to separate a little bit. It's a three-team battle for sixth, and then all of a sudden, Cleveland has come crashing down to earth, and Orlando has come crashing down to earth, and the Knicks have, kind of been fluttering themselves a little bit, and you look up, and even third place is on the line and something the Pacers could potentially get, which means this game on Friday is going to be a really, really significant one. If the Pacers can go into Cleveland, which, by the way, I just saw injury report, and it looks like the Cavs are pretty healthy, including Donovan Mitchell. So this is going to be a really tough one. You're in Cleveland, a ton on the line. This is going to feel like a playoff game on Friday, and when you're on the road, those are never easy. But if you could win it, you'd not only clinch a playoff berth, but you'd pass Cleveland and have the tiebreak over them. And Orlando plays Philadelphia, which that could easily be a 76ers win. And by the end of the day, you could be looking at yourself in fourth place with a game against Atlanta at home. And all you have to do is win that to have a game one in Indianapolis, which is just really hard to believe. But that's how tightly contested the standings are. And this is as exciting as a final week as I can remember in the NBA, let alone the Pacers being involved in.
Well, it's really tough to project what the matchups are going to be in that first round because there's so many teams that are logjammed. It's not just the Pacers that could move two or three spots. There's a lot of teams that could move two or three spots. But asking that question, Pat, it sets up favorable first round matchup. Is there, I mean, we know the Pacers' success against Milwaukee this year, but that's still a veteran playoff team that you have to be leery of. Is there one of the teams that the Pacers could play in the first round that you would consider to be more favorable than the others?
You know, I don't think that there really is, or that there really is one that jumps out. You know, Giannis got hurt the other day and he's going to miss the final three games of the regular season. And if he weren't to be there, Milwaukee might be that choice, but that's looking less and less likely as Milwaukee looks like they're closer to wrapping up the number two spot, which would mean the Pacers would have to be seven to get them. And that's not really a situation Pacers fans want, because that means falling back at the end of the year and going into the play-in tournament. And you look at everybody else, and if you say the other three potential teams are Cleveland and Orlando and New York, all of those would be tough matchups. None of them, I think, are all that frightening. I don't think you look at any of them and go, oh, man, they're going to have to play perfect to win this. That's not to suggest that they'll be a favorite. If the Pacers don't have home court advantage in the first round, I would assume they'd be a slight underdog in all those scenarios and maybe a slight favorite if they had home court advantage. But I look at Orlando. I look at New York, who's not getting Julius Randle back. And look at, you know, those teams that are just above you in the standings, Cleveland, and they're all teams that are flawed. They're all teams that have had stretches where they've really struggled. And none of them have a singular player like a Giannis or like a Joel Embiid where you go, oh, man, their best player is way better than our best player. So I think any of those are pretty favorable matchups for the Pacers. And if they get in a situation where they can get home court advantage, you know, I think you maybe were looking at the playoff picture a month ago and thinking, okay, can the Pacers get in? And then if so, if everything goes right, could they possibly win a series? And I think you're looking at it now saying you've got the opportunity to get home court advantage and maybe even be a slight favorite to begin a series, which is a pretty different discussion than maybe a few weeks ago. And I think that makes this final stretch here really exciting.
Can't tell you how much I appreciate the time, Pat. Great stuff.
Thanks, Brett. Appreciate you.
That is Pat Boylan joining us from the Indiana Fever and Indiana Pacers Broadcasting Network. Of course, news with both of them. The two worlds collide. Pacers finish up their regular season this week. And then next week, you've got the WNBA draft, where there will be a big party down in Indianapolis as everybody from coast to coast is waiting to hear the name Caitlin Clark announced atop that draft board come, Monday night?
Yeah, Monday night. I would love to hear if the league office actually contacted the Fever and just said, hey, just before we put all your games here on national media, we just want to make sure.
Do you think they needed to?
I don't think they needed to. But it's just like, just for assurance, you know, hey, we just want to make sure you're drafting Clark here.
I think if you would actually call and ask the Fever, you would be insulting the intelligence of the executives in front office of the Fever.
Got to check, though, man.
Lynn Dunn is not that crazy. Crazy, but not that crazy. All right, so coming up in our next hour, James Boyd's going to join us. We'll get to the bottom of what's happening with the Colts. Who are they targeting? Will they go up to get them? Also, What about the health of Anthony Richardson? We know he's started throwing. Have we heard about anything as far as follow-up on, are things going well? Are there setbacks? Is he on the right timeline? When do we expect to see him back throwing at a Colts practice? But we'll talk to James Boyd about that. And Eric Dutkevich from Parkview Sports Medicine, putting a bow on the Purdue coverage for this year, plus what's happening with the portal with the Boilermakers. Also, we'll talk to Dute about a couple of big names in local high school basketball that have stepped down and decided now's the time to step away, whether that's temporarily or permanently. But we're losing a couple of really first-class coaches in our area, and we'll talk to Eric Dutkevich about that coming up around 5:35. It is a Thursday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.